Yo, what's good? What's happening, Rush Nation? We're back. I say we're back. Ash has gone and left me again. He's somewhere up in the middle of England, so I thought I can't do this on my own. I'm possibly one of the worst person you want to listen to an hour talking about college football all on my own. Maybe a disservice, but I'm not sure. And I thought, well, the Iron Bowl's coming up. I know a Bama fan. Let's get involved. So our boy Jake, one of the staff writers, has jumped on. Jake, this is your second pod, right? You did one with Ash preseason week zero?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is my triumphant return, if you will. yeah, that's right. I jumped on earlier this year with Ash.
Super duper. Listen, Rush Nation, if you are currently the solitary person watching on the live stream because Twitter feed is currently down, or if you're an audio OG, head over to YouTube, subscribe on YouTube, hit the bell notification, because when we go live, you'll know then, and you won't have to rely on Twitter to let us know when you're live. So if you do go and watch via YouTube, hit the bell, get a notification. You can see me and this week, or me and Ash. And then Jake is going to come back and talk some Big 12 football later on in the year when we do our division reviews. You can see his Twitter name popped up on the screen right there, at Dynasty Brit. Jake, we've got some huge games in rivalry weekend this week that we're going to get to in a little bit. I want to start with the 5-yard showdown. You're not in it, so we're not going to go into too much depth. I'm just going to say that I am now the sole representation of 5-yard college in the 5-yard showdown. I gave Jack a thorough hammering last week. He deserved it, every single bit of it, after his final loss to me last year. I beat him in the semis this year. Sorry, mate. It was 240-yard points. I think it might be season high, so you got your dues there. And then Rich from the Dynasty side, he made the final. We beat Jord out. So if college is going to do it, you're relying on me, 5-yard college fans. So the showdown, me versus Rich, should be an absolute belter. Jake, we've got some news. You've got your notes. I've got the headlines. Let's dive right into it. Florida, as you have, if you're living under a rock, then perhaps you haven't seen this, but Florida have dismissed head coach Dan Mullen after 2 years for the Gators. Mullen was hired in 2017 and guided the Gators to a 69-46 record, but are currently sitting less than 500 at 5-6 in 2021. They've lost five straight games to Power 5 opponents. It's reported that Florida will pay Mullen $12 million across seven installments to buy out his contract. So, yes, Dan Mullen's been sacked, but I imagine he's sitting there fairly confident and comfortable right now with the money that's coming in installments. Jake, what's your thoughts on this?
I mean, if you're paying any attention to the NFL as well, Jason Garrett's just been fired as the Giants OC. And they didn't need to do that until the end of the season because the Giants aren't about to win anything. So so you never know. You never know. Mullen could already be already have a destination in mind. But yeah, it's a tough one, really. Like, do you give him more time? Do you not? He's shown, obviously, a lot of promise. He obviously had an amazing team last year, and even this year took Bama right to the wire as well. So but I think what a lot of people, especially in the industry, have sort of been writing about is the culture there and how things kind of like got off the rails. I mean, start back with the Marco Wilson shoe throwing incident last year against LSU, which lost them like a crucial game. And I think from then on there's not really been much of a sort of grasp on culture. And yeah, that sort of culminated in the loss to Mizzou at the weekend.
Yeah, and Mizzou were 10-point underdogs in that and ended up winning it outright. Yes. So it was a big win for them. I mean, one of the things Dan Mullen perhaps hasn't done so well for Florida, if you listen to any other podcast, they talk about it being recruiting is one of the big issues for Dan Mullen and stuff. And some of the names banded about are big on the recruiting trail. I mean, we've just seen Penn State extend their head coach when perhaps he was indefinite line for, I say definite line, he was one of the names bandied about for the jobs that seem to be opening left, right and centre now. So him off the list is one of the head coaches that perhaps we thought was going to switch around. And I don't know, it was a big deal for him and Penn State as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they're looking at around in the landscape at the moment. Obviously, you've got USC open, you've got LSU open.
Yep.
James Franklin was one of the names that was sort of mentioned in the last coaching cycle for open positions, for some of the top positions. So, I mean, yeah, I think they've obviously moved quickly. I think it is a little bit stupid. Like these 10-year, I think he's on about $9 million a year, right? 90 million, something like that. Yep. So it's like these, I mean, these schools get bent over a barrel by these agents, because they tell them that, well, I mean, if you don't lock this guy up, he could go. And that's obviously what they've done. They sort of moved to secure that there. And I mean, he's done well. He's been competitive against Ohio State, Michigan. He's probably got the clear sort of equally second best program in that in the conference, sort of on par with Michigan, really. I mean,
no, that's fine. Do you think it's one of those things where, with all these job vacancies opening up, especially names like USC and LSU, you get James Franklin at Penn State and Mel Tucker at Michigan State, who the athletic directors and people behind the back scenes are thinking, well, we don't want to lose them to these schools, so we've got to lock them up now with these huge deals. When perhaps I think you're right in the fact that it's a silly move, really. I mean, we saw it with John Gruden and the Raiders in the NFL, and maybe it's slightly different on the Gruden to Penn State, because Gruden was coming in, it was a new deal for 10 years, whereas the Penn State is basically an extension. And I heard today that it's quite team friendly. It's almost an essentially a year rolling contract with the money and how it's spread out. So
yeah, that's how I understand it.
So perhaps it's not as bad as initially thought, but I think maybe they're just trying to grab their guys that are already there rather than losing them to the schools that are opening up.
It's a real interesting one as well, because if you look at Penn State and you look at the job that they've got to do in that conference, it's tough. Obviously, they're competing against Ohio State and Michigan and Michigan State every year. Wisconsin, obviously, in the other division, that are often a challenger as well. So, but then arguably the job down in Florida is a lot harder job. The job at LSU is a lot harder job, although they get sort of similar amount of resources. Going up in the SEC West every year, obviously you're going up against Bama, and you've got Jimbo now at Texas A&M. He seems to have got things rolling. Leighton Kiffin's obviously at Ole Miss, and he's going to attract a lot of recruits as well because of the style of football that they play. So you've got a real hard job if you're going into the LSU coach. You've got a real hard job if you're going into the Florida coach. You're recruiting against Kirby Smart every year, and which seems like an almost insurmountable task by the way he's been recruiting. And then USC is obviously a complete rebuild. So, I mean, as much as people think like, oh, why wouldn't James Franklin leave Penn State? It probably wasn't that much of a difficult decision for him. He's going to get paid a lot of money to stay at school he knows he can win at. So, yeah, it's an interesting one when you look at it from a few different sides.
Yeah, you're right. The competitive nature of James Franklin's position at Penn State is much more attainable than it would be diving into an SEC school where you've got no idea what's going on, regardless of... And not only that, we seem to forget that recruiting cycles have already happened and stuff like that. So kids may... you know, not go to that school because of coaching changes and stuff like that. So, for instance, it could be a case of where you think James Franklin, let's just say, went into LSU, but some of those LSU kids might not think James Franklin's the guy for them, so they might decommit. And we see classes change all the time. So it's not necessarily a straight square peg in a square hole all the time. So there's so much. I didn't realise this when I got into college football. Just the sheer trickle-down effect of one thing happening is... much more vast than the NFL, much more vast. And it's great because there's so much more to learn about and stuff. Every time I look at college football, my mind is baffled because of the implications and the craziness of the whole thing. I mean, let's move on to UMass. They've hired Arizona defensive coach Don Brown as their new head coach. Is this the Don Brown from Michigan and the all or nothing that we saw on telly, Jake?
I don't believe so.
Okay, fair. I will carry on. Brown has been with Arizona at the start of 2021 and is returning to UMass. There you go. He previously coached in 2004 to 2008 and ended with a 43-19 record. So
that's right, when they were an FCS school. I'm just checking. I don't believe it's the Don Brown from Michigan. No. Oh no. Yeah, he was. He is the same guy. Yeah, he was working with Jim Harbaugh as the DC at Michigan before being fired last year.
There you go. There's our boy Ash popping up in the comments on a train home. Thanks for jumping in, big, and appreciate it. I'm glad I got my Don Brown right there. we're vastly approaching the draft, Jake. I say that it's still 5 months away, but for us college football fans, the regular season is almost done. We're coming into playoffs and New Year's Six games and stuff like that. And then the draft is blasting towards us faster than we can possibly imagine. When the start of the season, it was all Spencer Rattler, and he's going to be the number one overall pick. And obviously, Kayvon Thibodeau was, well, Spencer Rattler has destroyed that himself. And then Kayvon Thibodeau has exploded himself as an unbelievable talent. Matt Corral has announced his intention to enter the NFL draft once the current season has ended, and has thanked Ole Miss fans with a message on Twitter. Corral is being touted as a high pick in the 2022 draft, if you believe what Ash has written here. It's one of those things where there was a couple of cryptic messages on Twitter, perhaps from Corral before this message to say thank you. It was always going to happen, wasn't it? In a quarterback class that's got, I want to say worse. It's not, maybe it's just not as good as we expected for the 2022 class coming out. Then Matt Corral has done really well at Ole Miss this season and has maybe got himself into the number one quarterback contention in the NFL draft.
Yeah, there's definitely he's definitely in with a shout, that's for sure. The way he's played at Ole Miss is really, he's played really well this year. I think he's thrown 19 touchdowns and 3 interceptions so far, if I'm right. And I think he's got a couple on the ground as well. He's thrown 19 and he's 19 and 3 with 2 on the ground. Just over 3,000 yards. He's made like quite a few strides in sort of the mechanics aspects of it and decision-making aspect of playing the position as well. I think there's every reason he could have like a really strong pro day, really strong combine, and be right in there with one of the top picks. He's very likely to go into the first round, in the first round, just because of how the NFL values quarterbacks. So yeah, it'd be interesting offseason for him for sure.
Yeah, I've seen for some reason I've started looking at mock drafts, which is bananas at this time of year. But I've seen a few mock drafts where, you know, the first offensive player is outside the first 15 to 20 picks, just because of how strong defensively this class is. So it could be Ash's piped him some Carson Strong nonsense once again. He's Carson Strong will always be his QB1.
Ash. I mean, the NFL guys are going to love Carson Strong, right? He's like Josh Allen type, smaller school, like huge guy, huge frame, can absolutely sling the ball. Although unlike Josh Allen, like he's a little bit statuesque. But yeah, I think there's going to be some NFL scouts that are the old school type that are falling up with him.
Absolutely. He's got Pittsburgh Steelers written all over him. Which I'm imagining Ash is about to comment on there being absolutely a dream situation for him. So number 16 overall recruit quarterback Jaheim Singletary has committed to the Georgia Bulldogs and joins a growing list of high-end recruits to top this impressive 2021 season. Jaheim Singletary, Jake, what do you know about him?
He's a five-star guy that was like highly recruited. He originally committed to Ohio State, but then decommitted on August 1st. He then took a visit to Georgia on, I think, back in June. Obviously decommitted very, very recently. So he's a massive prospect. He's fast, he's lengthy. He seems to be like a ball hawk. You watch his tape, he's a bit of a ball hawk. What can you say? Another five-star in Georgia, right? Even as a Bama fan, I'm starting to get a little bit hot under the collar at their recruiting efforts, man. So, yeah.
No doubt. Yeah. There's something we missed off the news here, and I think either you or Jack brought it up in the college chat we've got, and that was an LSU cornerback got into the transfer portal. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. I forget the guy's name. The guy is called Eli Rick. Another high caliber guy. He's in a sophomore season this year. He will likely have a pick of the top schools that he wants to go to.
That's a big time loss for LSU, considering they're going to lose Stingley Jr. in the draft as well. So that cornerback room's getting flipped on its head come next season. And then finally, I added this one, Ash, because you missed it. I know you're watching. Troy University fired head coach Chip Lindsay on Sunday. Lindsay is 15-19 in three seasons at Troy, and I think has just left Troy just before they get bowl eligibility, I think. So an unusual move there for Troy and Chip Lindsay. Jake, anything on that? Because I have blindsided with you.
I remember Chip Lindsay from his time as the Auburn OC when with Gus Malzahn, I think. I'm right in saying that. Troy have been one of the better teams at that level for a long time. They've had a few sort of poor seasons recently. I think they're just looking to get back to winning ways.
Makes absolute sense. Right, let's talk some rankings. Jake, are you familiar with how Ash and I do the rankings in the podcast?
Maybe.
Okay, so we normally take five each. For some reason, there's only 17 teams here. So, Ash, I don't know what's happened here, mate, but there's only 17 teams.
Right, we'll pull it up.
I tell you what. You can go... Do you want to go first or second? I'll give you the option.
It's up to you, mate. Honestly, I honestly don't mind. You go for it. You kick it off.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you what. I'll do two. Then you can do five. I'll do five. And then you can finish with five because that includes your Alabama.
Right. Cool. Okay.
So here at 17, we've got Pitt. Then at 16 is Iowa. Because of their records, Jake, I don't see really anything wrong with those rankings. And then obviously we get to 15 and Texas A&M, which is where you take us over.
Then we've got Wisconsin coming in at 14, 8-3. BYU one spot below them at 9-2. Although I think if you polled most of college football media, they'd take Wisconsin over BYU.
Yep.
Michigan State obviously fall far after their drubbing by Ohio State coming in at 12. Oregon fall obviously after getting beat by Utah. They come in at 11. You've got Oklahoma at 10-1, who the committee just seemed to really dislike. they haven't really beaten anyone of the caliber, and obviously they've taken that loss as well. And you've got Ole Miss at 9-2 at 9. And I think I've just carried on going and going and going.
Yeah, mate, I'll tell you what, you
sorry, mate.
It's fine.
You up for a few.
We got Baylor at 8, 9-2. Oklahoma State Cowboys at 7 with a 10-1 record, and then Notre Dame at 6 with a 10-1 record as well. It's really good that Bedlam is probably going to mean something this year with the Oklahoma State and Oklahoma current rankings, both 10-1. Of those teams that we've just mentioned, Jake, is there anybody, you mentioned Wisconsin should probably be above BYU.
Mm.
Of the rest of the teams, Oregon, them falling from the top 4 down to 11, just that one game is a huge drop-off, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you look at the losses they've taken. They've taken a loss to
Stanford, the first one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they were a poor team this year, and obviously the loss last week to Utah. Obviously they beat Ohio State, but I think everyone would have seen from that point on in the season, Ohio State been on one trajectory and Oregon have been on another. So
yeah,
I'm surprised I kept them in the top 15, to be honest with you. I would have probably put them behind Michigan State even with the heavy loss after sort of I guess the reason they put them in there is obviously because Oregon's beat Ohio State and Michigan just got thumped by them, so kind of does make sense if you look at it. But I'm really looking forward to Bedlam this weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch these two teams. I think they're as closely matched as we've seen these two teams in quite a while as well. Oklahoma State's defense is really nasty, but they sort of can stumble a little at times on offense. Whereas, sort of, it's the opposite sort of thing for Oklahoma, right? Like Oklahoma's offense is nasty, but they can sort of kind of stumble at times on defense and have given up a lot of points a few times this year. So. Yeah, really looking forward to that one.
Mr. Goddard, get out of my show, Doc. You're on a train. Leave it alone. Leave it alone. We're not going to... I'll just run through what Ash has added, obviously. Below Pitt at 17, you've got Utah, then NC... It's gone again. He's got rid of it. Ash, you're like a gremlin in my system. I now can't... I don't have it in front of me. All right.
Come on, Z. Come on, Z.
Yeah, and there you go. Okay, so the Oregon drop was big, considering it's one loss. You're right about the Ohio State trajectory of them. They almost needed that Oregon loss to turn some sort of switch on, because then CJ Stroud and coaches was like, well, we're going to win out. We're going to win out every game by a phenomenal amount. They're now at two. So we said Notre Dame at six. Michigan's at five. Cincy are at four. If you haven't seen it, welcome to a group of five team making the top four. Alabama, Jake, your Red Tide are at three. Ohio State jump Bama to two, and Georgia are just firmly planted at number one. The top four, how do you see it?
I think this is... I'm just so cynical about the playoff committee, and I think this is them going, he goes to Cincinnati, like, have your 15 minutes. And when Oklahoma win the Big 12... at 12-1, they get bumped. Do you know what I mean? Or Notre Dame finish 11-1, Alabama lose to Georgia, Oklahoma win the Big 12, Cincinnati still gets bumped. So I still don't see them putting them in. I just don't. I've been so cynical about the playoff and the committee since its inception. I don't think it was ever set up to get a group of five team in the playoff. I think the whole point of the playoff was to ensure that four teams with the biggest national brands and the most elite teams in college football were the center stage for the sort of final 2 weeks of the year. So, I think it's a nice meager offering from the committee for Cincinnati before they pull the rug from them.
I am a huge cynic of the whole college football playoff ranking thing, but I am very much a positive outlook kind of guy. So I like the fact that since you're in there at four, is it a bit heartbreaking that, like you say, they're just going to get trampled on and have that moment of, you know, we're in, so as long as we win out here, we're going to stay in, because that there's so many connotations to that. Would it be better to leave them out and just think, oh, you were so close yet again, wait for the expansion, perhaps? I don't know. But the positivity and of my side of things, I want to stay. I want them to be in there just for them to prove to, you know, to teams that they come up against the big dogs and can we play? Because they played fairly well last year against Georgia. So,
yeah, we will see. I think they're one of the clear four best teams in the country. I don't think there's any doubt about it, to be honest with you. It's tough because there's gonna be this horrible moment potentially when they put Notre Dame in at four, and even though Cincinnati beat Notre Dame on the road in South Bend, and they'll just say, "Well, Notre Dame played a better schedule," and that will be their argument, and they'll walk away, and they don't care. The eyes that they know will be on a Notre Dame football game is up here compared to what they know will be on a Cincinnati game. And even though the whole of the college football world, I think, is rooting for Cincinnati in unison, and Luke Fickle's built an unbelievably great program there for a group of five team, and they look like a top. They look like one of the top teams in college football, without a doubt. So it's going to be absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, and this is not for me. I want them to be in there. Like, I definitely
Yeah, of course.
Want them to be in there. And I think they would. I think if you got them in at four, I think they would take Georgia. I think they would. That would not be a walkover. I don't think that would be a walkover from Georgia. I think they would take them to the fourth quarter and make them win that game.
So obviously, Alabama dropped to three. The Buckeyes moved to two. How do you feel about that, being a Bama fan? Do you think that's a fair representation of football currently?
No, I hate what I said. No, yeah, it's definitely. I mean, you look at Ohio State last weekend beating number seven at the time, a Michigan State team, absolutely trampling all over them, throwing for a million yards, and I think there was like three Ohio State receivers that had over 100 yards, right? I think. Alabama had 140, Smith Ajigba had over 100, and Garrett Wilson had over 100 as well. I think Garrett Wilson and Alabama both had two, and Ajigba had one. So I mean, it's and then we struggled to beat Arkansas. I mean, you look at Bryce Young's stats and you think we absolutely walked that game and they sort of made a garbage time comeback, but that wasn't the case. And we just struggled to run the ball, and our defense made a lot of mistakes in that game. And we don't particularly look like one of the best teams in the country at the moment. Like, this is one of the worst Alabama teams I've seen outside of the quarterback position since becoming a fan in sort of late 2008-09.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize the Buckeyes had 7 plays in the first half and all 7 went for touchdowns. Like 7 drives, sorry, and they all resulted in touchdowns. It was just a phenomenal exhibition of football. And luckily, I was playing against Garrett Wilson in the 5-yard showdown semi-finals, and I looked at my phone, and he had sort of 28 points at halftime, and I thought, I'm going to get smashed here. I'm going to get beaten, because he also had Henderson as a running back, and I thought, they're going to run this up now. It could be 100 points for Ohio State here, and I'm going to get violated. And they didn't do anything in the second half. It was fantastic from my point of view.
Is Ash a Michigan fan? Because he's just put Jake's band from Pods and Futures.
No, he's a Buckeyes fan, and you uttered the unhallowed words of "you hate Ohio State," so you've got yourself a ban until the Big 12 pod when we need you back, Jake. I'm afraid it's got to.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so as the playoff stands, obviously Bama will play the Buckeyes. Where's that going to go? How do we play that?
It's so tough. I honestly don't think it's going to end like that. I don't see a way at the moment that Alabama can beat Georgia unless we just try and throw on every down. We just, do you know what I mean, play 4 wide and just try and throw quick passes and get really, really inventive with the offensive scheme and just throw caution to the wind. I just don't see a way of us scoring on them enough where they won't and limiting them as well, because you look at them, they've been okay on offense. Stetson Bennett's got better and better as the years go on, and Alabama's given up oodles of yards to everybody. we've given up hundreds and hundreds of yards to Florida and Arkansas alone. Like, it's been tough to watch this year for a Bama fan, and saying that with us sat through it third in the country, like, I know it sounds, I know most people want to stab pins in my eyes at the moment, but I just don't see a way of us being in that third spot at the end of the season. And
so my next question with that then is, as everybody else has been talking about on every podcast you listen to, can Alabama stay in the top four with a 2-loss season, or are they out if they lose to Auburn in the Iron Bowl or Georgia in the SEC Championship game?
We need chaos, that's for sure. I think for that to happen, if we lose to Georgia, obviously Ohio State are likely going to be in, or one of Michigan and Ohio State are likely going to be in. But I mean, again, this is 2021. Look at what we've seen happen this year already. I mean, we never expected Oregon to go into the shoe and beat Ohio State. We never expected Kansas to beat Texas. There's been sort of huge wins and losses all over the shop for teams. And so, I mean, you just don't know. A lot of sort of chaos needs to happen. We could do with Oklahoma losing this weekend, for example, to Oklahoma State. That would be massive for Bama, because that then, if Baylor win, that puts Oklahoma out of the championship game and then them out of the playoff run. And Oklahoma State then are obviously well within a shot of making a playoff themselves, but they're a lot less of a threat. And I think they could be beaten by Baylor in the championship game in an easier fashion than I think they could beat Oklahoma, after Oklahoma have already played them once. You know what I mean? It's highly unlikely you see a team that's normally an underdog beat a team twice in one season. So, we could do with that happen. We could do with Michigan beating Ohio State. That'd be really nice. And then Michigan then losing to Wisconsin as well. That'd be even better. Then it would just be absolute chaos. But I just don't think it's going to happen. I think obviously one of Oklahoma State or Oklahoma are going to likely win out, or at least become be a one loss B12 champion. So we'll see what happens really.
I mean, we've got some week 12 games we're going to run through. We've sort of covered off two of the four games were Arkansas, Alabama, and Michigan State. We've sort of covered off them. Of the Arkansas, Alabama game, Arkansas, Chris, stop reading it and just say it. Arkansas, Alabama.
I hope there's not any Arkansas fans.
Listening. Yeah, we've got loads of Arkansas fans. Yeah, no, Arkansas, Alabama. Is there anything from that game you want to cover off before we get to Wake Forest, Clemson?
Only that I think Bryce Young just looks so elite, so poised in the pocket, moving in and out of the space, moving out of the pocket when he needs to, making great decisions. It just looked like an elite quarterback. And when that team becomes a more complete team around him, they are going to be lethal. So that's pretty much all I want to say about that. And congratulations to Arkansas as well. They played an unbelievably good game. Sam Pittman's got that team running for a wall. It's unreal how hard they fight, and they caused a lot of the mistakes that Bama made. So it wasn't just sort of Bama being bad; it was Arkansas as well causing those mistakes. And so, they almost deserve to win that game. And to be fair, there's more than enough evidence there for an argument that they did deserve to win that game. So, that's about all I want to really say about that one. Moving on.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw Bryce Young play, I messaged Tom and I said, this dude's pocket presence and ability to sort of acknowledge plays that are going on and recognition of what's happening was just phenomenal. Just his movement in the pocket and control of the pocket was just, for somebody who's never really played on that level before, like you say, if they can weapon him up, it's going to be terrifying for the SEC. And it needs to be with Georgia's recruiting class. Bama need to stay relevant. I say stay relevant. Like you said, they're third in the country and we're talking about them like they're falling away. But there's some work to do. But I think with Bryce Young, it certainly fits the mold of everything we've seen from Bama before and going forward. It's a nice... Go on.
I was just say one quick comment. Pete Golden's got a lot of stick over the season as the DC. I don't think he's the guy for the long term. I know he's been there for a few years now, but we've seen some of the worst Bama defenses under Pete Golden in the last 10 years. And they just don't seem to beat or dominate the good teams. You know, obviously you've got guys like Will Anderson who are wrecking people on his own. But Golden's, I don't think he's the guy. I wouldn't be surprised if Saban makes a move at that position in the off season, and I also don't think Bill O'Brien's a guy either. I never really rated him as an NFL head coach. I don't think while Bryce has obviously been put in a lot of good positions, made a lot of good throws, the running game hasn't been good. I mean, Alabama, that running game isn't really Alabama. So, that's one. But another thing I just wanted to mention, I think you could see a few changes at OC or DC at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, we could well see Bob in a job somewhere else, couldn't we? His name's been touted about for a head coaching role somewhere within college football. So,
please take him.
Yeah,
we'll have Dan Mullen as an offensive coordinator, and can you imagine Nick Saban's school of rehabilitation?
Yeah, right. Wake Forest went into Clemson. It turned out to be a game that was far different to what we thought. Wake normally start fast. They found themselves 10-0 down after the first quarter, 17-10 down at halftime, and then Clemson put the burners on and ended up winning 48-27. Will Shipley had himself a day, passed for a touchdown, ran in for 212 yards off 19 attempts. And then Kobe Pace also had a day, nearly 200 yards on the ground, two touchdowns. They didn't really need to pass the ball, 12 pass attempts, and they controlled the game from start to finish, which was much more like the Clemson we're used to seeing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. DJU had a really nice game as well. That pass deep along the right-hand sideline in the first quarter where he evaded two rushes, you think he's going to get sacked both times, he evades two, looks downfield as he's rolling out and like throws a really good deep ball to Bo Collins. Then there was the jump pass for the touchdown as well, which was really nicely played by DJ. And then another perfect throw to Bo Collins with his, you see the one-handed catch. It was super nice. Bo Collins, he's literally the DB super tight on him, basically playing blanket coverage. And Bo Collins just sticks his left arm out and brings it in. And it was like a perfect throw from DJ. So it was really nice to see DJU actually make some quite clear strides in his play, in his passing play. He's sort of been written off as a Clemson quarterback, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him still under center next year if no one comes in as a true freshman and lights it up in camp. So it was Clemson Tigers back to being Clemson Tigers, really, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And then finally, we've got SMU at Cincinnati. Cincy ended up winning. I say ended up. They won 48-14. I think they were up by a significant amount earlier. I want to say it was, I can't see the score in front of me, but they were up to nothing real quick. And since this was the first game in sort of 4 weeks where Cincinnati needed to blow the opposition out, they haven't done in the last 3 weeks, but they smashed SMU here. And it was an SMU team that we thought with Tanner Mordecai might cause Cincinnati some problems. But at the end of the day, it was all Cincinnati and one-way traffic.
Yeah, they did what they needed to do, right? The criticism, the only real criticism of Cincinnati so far this year is that they sort of stumbled in games against Navy. For example, I think Tulsa as well took them right down to the wire. And so it was really important for their slim playoff hopes to get a big win this week. And yeah, they definitely did that. It was a convincing win. It's the only problem is that it's not SMU out of the rankings, out of the playoff rankings, and that then hurts Cincinnati, you know, now because they're gonna look at that come the end of the season with SMU not being ranked, and that's one less ranked win on their resume.
I guess the only thing to caveat that would be that Notre Dame are really turning the burners on it at the moment and playing good football, and the fact that Cincinnati beat Notre Dame's obviously helping their cause there, perhaps on the flip side of that coin. Okay, Jake, it's rivalry week. You've added to the show doc because we didn't have the Iron Bowl in it. Let's start with your Alabama Crimson Tide heading into Auburn. This is a big one, right?
Yeah, it is. I'm kind of gutted, really, because it would have been really cool to go up against Bo Nix. Not that it would have given me sweats for sure watching him run around and probably make like ridiculous passes that obviously, because they're playing against us, just happen to land in the arms of his receivers. But so it's going to be kind of a lesser intense game with, I think they've got TJ Finley at quarterback now.
Yep.
Obviously, Auburn is still going to turn up. It's Auburn. It's in Jordan Hare. The crowd's still going to be mental. And as we've seen with Bama this year, you don't have to be a complete team to beat Bama. And if they can run the ball and play really, really good defense, there's a definite chance that they could cause an upset. We've already seen it with this year. You look at what Arkansas's game plan was just run the ball down our throats and then hit us on the pass. And they've worked that pretty effectively and scored plenty of points in us. So there's no reason why Auburn can't pull the upset.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, Bama are nearly 3 touchdown favourites. It's -19.5 in Bama's favour, but the over-under is only 56, so they're not expecting a hugely explosive game here, which is, I don't know, do Iron Bowls tend to be high-scoring affairs?
Had a few over the last few years that have been. Yeah, especially with like Jalen Hurts and when Jalen Hurts played and Tua, his one was, I think, was in the 30s or 40 points. It's been like that sort of the last few years recently. It's been a little bit more back and forth as college offenses have opened up and we've seen more of a trend towards explosive offense and just enough defense rather than dominant defense. So it could easily be that, but I think you see that spread is largely reflective of Bo Nix not being at quarterback and TJ Finley only having one start this year and then not playing well in it and struggling. So I think Vegas don't see a massive ceiling for TJ Finley in regards to points. We could easily score a lot of points, but we could also have ability to be a league for defense as well. So yeah, it could go either way. I'm just hoping for a comfortable win, to be honest with you. Just a comfortable win and less concerned about Georgia.
There's just looking through the slate for this week. There's some absolutely massive games rivalry week that's just not mentioned. I mean, you've got both the Arizona or Arizona State, Vanderbilt are at Tennessee. That's a massive one for Tennessee, the state of Tennessee. Then you've got the Civil War. We're just about to talk about that. But Oregon State, Oregon. I don't think you're allowed to call it the Civil War anymore, but nobody's going to come after us on the little pod that can. this is a massive one for Oregon and Oregon State. I mean, it's probably not as big as perhaps it could have been if Oregon needed the win here to stay in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on this one, Jake?
I don't follow the Pac-12 very closely.
Oh, man, you can't say that. Jordan's already upset that we don't cover Pac-12, and now you're saying they're irrelevant and you don't really listen to them. So, Jordan, I'm so sorry, mate. I'm so sorry.
If there's a year that they're going to do it, this is the year, right, for Oregon State. They look like more of a complete team than they've looked in years past. They've been competitive in pretty much every game that they've been in this year. I mean, Oregon look like they have holes. Obviously, Kayvon Thibodeau is an absolute like wrecking ball, but they have problems scoring. They're quite one dimensional, and they've been hit with a few injuries as well. So it could go either way, honestly. I think, if you ask me to put money on it right now, I'd say Oregon State pulls the upset. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about the Civil War is the uniforms tend to be absolute fire for that game. So that's something to look forward to in that situation. Talking of uniforms, Jake, did you see the Utah helmets from the win over Oregon last weekend?
Yeah, they were all individually painted, if I'm right.
Yeah, so when I heard this on a podcast, I thought, I've got to go and check this out, because I thought it would just be a standard Ute symbol that was painted onto their helmet. But obviously, with it being Veterans Day and they were celebrating the armed forces across America, it was a red sort of, have you seen it?
Yeah.
So it's like a red glossy sort of fiery, it's not a pure color, it's a sort of marbled, but then it's got the battleship of the USS, I can't remember the name of the battleship that they were commemorating, but it was a hand painted battleship across one side of the helmet. And everybody's was hand painted. It was just unbelievable.
Absolutely unbelievable. Super cool. Yeah, I mean, a real nice touch as well on Veterans Day. Just super cool. This is why we love college football, right? Like stuff like this. You don't get that sort of. I know, obviously, you get tributes in the NFL, but there's the craziness and all the different levels of passionate fandom and at the college football level. I mean, you get awesome stuff like this, like the Army and Navy uniforms for the game every year. Like they're always a big thing. Like Oregon's uniforms and the helmets, obviously, that last week for Utah. Like it's so cool, man. Like we're so lucky.
Oh yes, we are. Jake, I want to touch on UMass at New Mexico State, battle of the 1 and 10 teams. Who are you? No, I'm joking. we've talked about Bedlam We've talked about Bedlam. You've touched on the Iron Bowl with Bama and Auburn. And then finally on the slate, we've got UNC at NC State. That's a big one too, right?
Yeah, NC State is still within a chance of winning the division and going to the conference title game, aren't they? I know it's a bit of an outside shot, but they still need to win this game. And obviously, Sam Howell's going to want to put in a good performance for his draft stock. UNC and obviously Mac Brown's UNC are going to want to finish strong at the end of this run. So it's gonna be an interesting one. I think it'll be pretty close, to be honest with you. I don't follow the ACC too much, as I write about the Big 12 and I'm a huge SEC fan, and I'm not as familiar with both of their rosters, but I'm looking forward to seeing the highlights and seeing what kind of performance Sam Howell puts in.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially a North Carolina. Can North Carolina run on a North Carolina State Wolfpack defense that's pretty good against the run? That's where, because they're pretty evenly matched passing yards, 50th and 34th in the country. But it's the rushing yards per game is ridiculous. I mean, NC State don't really run the football, whereas North Carolina do. There's 100 yards difference in the average per game there. So that will be a really interesting to watch. The over-under is 62 as well, so that one could get out of hand pretty quick. Is there anything else from Rivalry Weekend, Jake, that you wanted to cover, or if we hit all the spots right there?
The Egg Bowl.
Go for it.
Can't not touch on the Egg Bowl after how. I mean, there's the best rivalries in college football, right? And I think I'm kind of regurgitating this. I can't remember which podcast I heard it on. I'm pretty sure it was the Cover 3 podcast, the CBS one. I can't remember who was saying it, but there's like the best rivalries in college football. Okay, so like Alabama, Auburn, and Michigan, Ohio State, and then there's the teams that hate each other the most, and that is without a doubt Mississippi State versus Ole Miss, and that is this Thanksgiving Thursday night, it's just unbelievably awesome. I mean, you had a couple of years ago, you had Elijah Moore scoring a touchdown and then pretending to do a dog peeing celebration in the end zone. It cost his team 15 yards, and then they ended up losing the game because it was, do you know what I mean? It's just like two fan bases that vehemently despise each other as well, absolutely despise each other. I don't know if you saw a few years back, but SB Nation did a really good little documentary series with that was done by Stephen Godfrey. Who's one of my favorite college football writers, that's one of my inspirations in like sort of getting into writing. And they did this amazing documentary series about the Bagmen and how the recruiting war and sort of players having bags or bin liners of cash dumped on their doorstep, and it was just absolutely awesome. And it really like sort of highlighted how much these two communities just despise each other. And so I know that might not be the best caliber of football, though you get to see Matt Corral and Mississippi State team that have performed above expectations this year. In a game where two teams absolutely hate each other, it's just going to be carnage. I just can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, you say it's Thanksgiving. I'm seeing here that it's 12:30 a.m. So does that mean it's tonight for us?
I think that might mean it's 12:30 a.m. on Thanksgiving, so like the early Friday morning. I don't think it's tonight. They don't ever play it on a Wednesday, the Egg Bowl. So,
okay.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. I mean, there's a few games on Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, there's going to be a couple of decent fixtures. The only one I'll be watching will be that one because my girlfriend who lives with me here is American. She's from upstate New York, so I've taken tomorrow and Friday off work, and we're gonna do sort of a Thanksgiving with my family, so it's make her feel as at home as possible. So, I'm only allowed to watch college football when she goes to sleep in the evening.
Well, Jake, that segues us perfectly to, I guess, the end of the show, and that is if you are an audio OG and you are listening on Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving to everybody in America. Everybody, Thanksgiving to everybody celebrating. Who isn't perhaps in America, but is celebrating Thanksgiving like Jake, your girlfriend. So do wish her a happy Thanksgiving on behalf of all the boys at 5 Yard College and 5 Yard Rush. I know she probably has no idea who we are or who even care, but we like to extend our warmest Thanksgiving.
You're just the annoying group chat that beeps on my phone often. That's that's it.
Yeah. One of the guys in the 5 Yard chat, Pitsy, his wife has exactly the same opinion, and then the NFL is stupid, and we are the people that talk to her about the stupid sport. So
cheers, Doctor. Yeah, I'll pass that on.
Man, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. If for people who are perhaps listening for the first time, I'm not sure why you would be so deep into the college season, but if you are, welcome. Where can they find you, Jake, on social medias and all the stuff you do?
Dynasty Brit on the screen right now on Twitter. That's where to find me. I'll link all my articles and things that I write, and everything goes there. So hit me up.
Super duper. Well, Jake, we appreciate your Big 12 love this season, and we are going to have you back, regardless of what Ash says in the chat, to cover the Big 12. We're going to get in depth right there. Listen, man, it's been a pleasure to finally meet you in person. I say in person, over the Zoom, or you know how it is these days. But yeah, it's been my pleasure, man.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, mate. Yeah, really, really enjoyed it. Sorry for my rustiness.
No, it's been good, man. It's been good. Rush Nation, it is Wednesday night. If you're new to the schedule, if you're listening late, we appreciate you for listening early Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving. Listen, head over to 5yardrush.co.uk. Check out everybody's superb articles that are dropping right now. If you are in a final of your college fantasy league, I wish you the best of luck. Unless you are rich from the dynasty side, then I'll see you on the podium late Saturday evening. Rush Nation, it leaves me one thing to say, and that is that Saturdays are for rushing too.